It's 2:07 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live in exile from my living room in Palm Springs, California. And it's time to open up the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
You know, John, there's a theory when people commit crime that there's no point in robbing the 7-Eleven. You might as well rob the bank. A man who worked at a COVID-19 vaccine site at Pomona Fairplex has been charged with grand theft. He stole more than 500 blank vaccine cards that he could sell on the black market for $15 each.
I guess there's a black market for everything.
I think I do. If I'm going to go ahead and break the law, I do it for more than $15.
Well, you know, we've been keeping tabs on the spike in crime, and we've seen increases in crimes like rape, arson, murder. But there's one crime that we really haven't been able to keep tabs on. You know what that is, Randy?
And what's that?
Bank robberies. Because now everyone going into a bank is wearing a mask. 800-222-KABC is the number, 1-800-222-5222. It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the show. He is the host of the Too Many Lawyers podcast with his son, Connor, who is also an attorney. You can download that wherever you download your favorite podcasts. He's also KABC's legal analyst, Royal Oaks. Royal, welcome.
Hey, my pleasure, John. How are you?
Fantastic. Well, this is a segment that's been in the making for a long time because we get so many calls, so many emails from listeners who have legal questions about COVID-19, the lockdowns, the vaccines, all of it together, and they don't know the answers. The layman can't figure out what they're supposed to do, what they're legally obliged to do, and what they don't have to do. But you are the legal eagle, so maybe you can help us shed some light on these things.
Sounds good. I'll do my best.
All right. One of the most common questions that we get is when an employee is told by their employer that if they want to continue working in a particular job, they have to get vaccinated and show proof of vaccination. Now, these vaccines, of course, are not FDA approved yet. They're given an experimental emergency use authorization. And thank God for that, because there are vulnerable people who need the vaccines to avoid contracting the virus and dying. But there are people who are pregnant, there are people who are otherwise healthy, who are lactating women, whatever, or already had COVID and survived it, and they don't want to take the vaccine. What is your legal obligation if your boss tells you you have to get it?
Well, pretty much you do have to get the vaccine if the boss requires it. The law only requires people to get an approved vaccine. I mean, otherwise, you know, the employee could say, oh, you want that vaccine? Well, you know, I had a Butterfinger dipped in Listerine, and the doc told me that would work. You can't do that. So the idea is, and actually the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, they regularly come out with guidelines, and they just came out with one a few days ago, and they said, yeah, the boss may require a vaccine before returning to the workplace. I mean, the reality, John, is that a lot of companies don't like to come across as the bad guy. They don't want unhappy people. They don't want people leaving. And one study said like 28% of people would just quit their job if they were forced to take the vaccine. So instead, they're using kind of the carrot instead of the stick. They're giving incentives, financial incentives, other things. So they're trying to get it done one way or the other. But theoretically, if they wanted to be the tough guy, yeah, the boss can say, look, if you do want to return to work, you have to get the vaccine.
One of the things that you have to do if you take the vaccine now, because it does have emergency usage authorization, it's not FDA approved, is you have to sign a bunch of legal waivers saying you won't sue Johnson & Johnson, you won't sue Moderna, you won't sue Pfizer. You give up that right when you take the shot, knowing that it's experimental. If your boss says you have to take it, and you take it because you want to keep your job, and then you get blood clots or there's some sort of complication from the vaccine, can you sue your employer?
Yeah, you can. There's no guarantee you're going to win, but the law gives some flexibility. Even though somebody signs away their rights, oftentimes people are able to go back into court and say, okay, Your Honor, here's what happened. I didn't know what I was doing there. I'm no medical doctor. They were doing a big flim-flam thing. Or they really coerced me, you know, they twisted my arm. It really wasn't an equal bargaining situation. It's not like I sit down with Jeff Bezos and hash out, you know, the terms of the contract. It's basically a take-it-or-leave-it thing. And under some circumstances, the court might give you some relief, but it might be an uphill battle. Basically, the deck is stacked against a person. If they did sign away some rights, probably that's going to be upheld by the court, but not necessarily. And if you have some horrendous situation, if you get the blood clot and a family member dies or whatever, then theoretically you're going to find a lawyer to go ahead and file a lawsuit and try to overcome the fact that it appears that you gave up some of your rights.
One of the announcements that United Airlines recently made is that for all new hires, they're not going to force current employees to get vaccinated, but all new hires would be forced to show proof of vaccination. Is that something a prospective employer can ask you when you turn in your resume or you turn in your forms?
Yeah, the government's saying that the companies do have a right to do that. And, you know, it's funny the way you describe it. It kind of brings to mind an analogous situation, namely drug testing. The general rule is that if you're on the job and the boss all of a sudden shows up out of the blue and says, hey, guess what? Here's a bottle. Go into the men's room there. They can't do that. They can't just do random drug testing. If they want to test you for drugs, there's got to be some suggestion that you've been firing up a doobie in the bathroom, and then that would give them the right to do it. But if you are a new hire, the law generally says, yeah, the boss is entitled to say, everybody, if you want to come on board here at the LA Times or General Electric or whatever, you've got to take a drug test. It's not a perfect analogy because generally even the existing employees here are being required before returning to the workplace by many companies to take the vaccine. But definitely, if you're a new hire, the company does have a right to say, look, you know, we've got to do this. And one of the issues that the companies rely on is that there's this OSHA law, Occupational Safety and Health, that requires companies to provide a safe workplace. And if they didn't require people to get their shots, then maybe the company would face lawsuits from people down the road. Oh, you know, I was exposed to COVID. If only the company had been strict about this and made sure Joe in the next cubicle had gotten the vaccine, I wouldn't have gotten sick. So, you know, litigation disaster sort of looms over a lot of companies, and that's why a bunch of them are being pretty strict about this.
One of the groups of people that the vaccine has not been tested on are children, people under the age of 16, or I think maybe it's 12 years old. There are school districts that are talking about requiring vaccination for on-campus instruction. Certainly the teachers' unions don't want to go back to work, especially here in Los Angeles with UTLA, and they're looking to throw up as many roadblocks as humanly possible to going back to normal. If a school district were to come out and say, if you want to send your kid to school in this district for on-campus instruction, you have to show proof of vaccination, can they do that to minors?
Well, it's hard to know how that would turn out in court. In general, each state decides what vaccines are required for kids in schools so that the federal government really doesn't get involved. The CDC has not come out and said, yes, there should be vaccine requirements for school kids, or no, there shouldn't be. So you got to go state by state. Now, in California, you know, we've got a healthy tradition of mandatory vaccines. If you're a kid in K through 12, you have no choice. You got to get polio and diphtheria and whooping cough and hepatitis and measles and mumps, rubella and chickenpox. This is just a required thing. And, you know, of course, there are always, you know, kerfuffles and religious objections and medical. You know, if a doctor says, well, this particular kid, his head's going to blow up if he gets a diphtheria immunization, then they look into it. But in general, you know, for these kinds of standard vaccinations, the benefit is so huge to make sure we don't have, you know, polio and measles and so on come back. And the risks are relatively minor. These are barely established from decades back, these vaccinations. So it's different from the situation in COVID. I mean, at both ends. On the one hand, whereas we really, really don't want kids to get these dread diseases, the risk of kids getting COVID, as you know and as you've reported for a long time on your show and with your experts, it just ain't there. It's just not going to happen. You know, yes, you read about people, you know, winning the lottery and losing the lottery of life, by getting horrible diseases when it's statistically almost impossible to happen. But basically, kids are safe. And on the other end of the spectrum, the vaccines, they're hopefully very safe, but we certainly don't have the track record for COVID vaccines to know a safety level compared to the track record for the other things, for measles and mumps and so on. So, you know, there's a huge political battle looming. School boards and legislatures, they know if they force kids to get shots, there's going to be a backlash. There's going to be a price to be paid at the ballot box, maybe. So, you know, schools are trying to figure out just what they want to insist on. Right now, we do not have K through 12 schools requiring COVID for the kids when they come back in the fall. By contrast, the UC system and the California State University systems, they're on board. Their plan is to require not just staff, but the students to be immunized at the start of the fall term. So that's teeing up a big battle that we could have in the fall.
When I was a child, my best friend's dad was a school administrator, and he had a PhD in psychology, but always used to say, if I had to do it over again, I would have gotten a law degree because I spent all of my time in court dealing with legal subjects. And one of the subjects that he had to deal with all the time is that, constitutionally speaking, in the state of California, every child is constitutionally guaranteed an education. It doesn't matter if you're in juvenile hall. It doesn't matter if you are severely disabled. Whatever the case may be, the state of California is expected to provide you with an adequate education. Right now, we have less than half of the students on campus getting instruction in a traditional way. When you listen to what the teachers' unions are saying, they have zero interest in having things go back to normal for the summer, the fall, maybe into next year. There are some who have sued these school districts, including Harmeet Dhillon, who we had on the program earlier this week, saying, you're violating these kids' constitutional rights by denying them a public education that the state of California is obligated to provide. What do you think is going to happen with those lawsuits?
You know, they would face an uphill battle, I think, John, because the defense would be, well, maybe it's not as good as it could be or should be, but at least the kids are sitting in front of their screen on a Zoom lesson. And although a lot of people have criticisms of that, and interestingly, we've seen some people recently say we really love it because our kids don't get mistreated and bullied and so on at home looking at Zoom the way they do at school. But in general, the school districts would be able to say, look, you know, it's not like we're just cutting the kids loose and sending them out into the desert to, you know, to forage for cactus. We are providing a benefit. But the fact is, I mean, the studies are going to come in and experts are going to start saying very persuasively that it is just not the same, that the kids need the socialization, that, you know, the parents, that the teachers aren't putting in the same effort on the Zoom level. So, I mean, you can always say, as a governmental entity, whether it's a board or a city, you can always say, look, we understand there is this law. You've got to guarantee an education, whether it's, you know, a kid, as you say, in juvenile hall, or if it's a Paul Peterson on the set of the Donna Reed show, they've got to have an education. But if an asteroid wipes out Fresno and Fresno can't provide city services and school and so on, then, you know, don't bother us. You know, we're busy rebuilding. And so, you know, sorry, it's a crisis. It's an emergency. It was a pandemic. Everybody's wearing masks. Have you noticed? So that's the kind of answer they're going to give in court. And, yeah, I wouldn't bet on the chances of the lawsuits because, again, I think the judges would sort of tilt toward the idea that, look, the schools are doing the best they can. Let's give this thing another year to work out. And then if they're still ripping your kids off, come back and see me.
One of the things that's happened since the pandemic started, obviously, is that a lot of big public events have been shut down, including concerts, sporting events, festivals, whatever. And the policy for any of the sporting events that I've purchased tickets for has been they will credit the money to your account and you can reapply it for the next season or the next concert or the next whatever. There are business owners in California who have to buy things like business licenses, liquor licenses, that sort of thing, who have been prohibited by law from operating their businesses for huge chunks of the year. If they go to the state of California and they say, we're collectively suing you, wanting a refund for our liquor licenses, our business licenses, because we weren't able to use them, Is that something that could potentially happen, or are they just out of luck?
Yeah, I think they're out of luck. I mean, because the answer to that is going to be, look, this was a Wuhan lab thing, which became a worldwide thing, and specifically it was a California or Los Angeles thing. We had to shut down. We didn't cause that, but we took rational steps, and they will defend the shutdown as having been rational steps. Now, if you could demonstrate that the shutdown was a wild overreaction and totally inappropriate, and look, you know, my liquor store went broke, my grocery store went broke, or whatever, then you might have a shot. But in general, the courts are going to be looking at this, and they're going to be saying, you know what, it's been kind of litigated a lot over the last year as to whether or not various municipalities or the governor of the state of California, whether they crossed the line and were ridiculous in the closure. And generally, those lawsuits have not worked. And so similarly, I think if people tried to step up and say, look, here is the tangible proof of exactly how much I suffered financially, and I built up my business for decades, and now, blammo, it's destroyed. I think they'd be unlikely to win because the courts would say, look, the government does have a right to take these severe steps. I mean, and it goes back to 1905, the U.S. Supreme Court came out and said that the government has a right to force everybody to get a smallpox vaccination. And since then, there have been other, you know, pandemic suits from the Spanish flu time in 1918 and so on. So there's this healthy tradition of the courts saying, you know, when there's a crisis, we're going to cut some slack to the government, and so they'd be less receptive to these kinds of lawsuits.
As evidence mounts that this virus did not come from a wet market in Wuhan, but instead came from a lab where it either leaked out or was intentionally put out, whatever, we don't know those details yet, but it's looking more likely that it came from the lab than the wet market. If we're able to prove that that's in fact where it came from, is there a way for other nations to sue China in any kind of international court?
Yeah, there are international courts like The Hague is the famous one that people have heard about, and there are various courts of claims. But so much of that kind of depends on the cooperativeness of the nations involved. And you can't always enforce a judgment with the same ease that you can, say, enforce in the United States. You know, you can get the sheriff to go out and take the guy's bank account or his cash register and so on. So you can take steps, but more commonly you try to, it's like George Bush Sr.'s steps in terms of the Iraq war and the invasion of Kuwait. He knew that we could go it alone, but he knew he didn't really want to do it. So he assembled a terrific international coalition that would apply a lot more pressure and be more successful militarily. Similarly, in these kinds of international claim situations, I think the only way it would really be effective would be for China to be facing a huge coalition of a bunch of big, strong nations that walk up to it and say, look, it's clear now, you guys are responsible. There's even some evidence that you were not only negligent, but really reckless about it. And you know, there's no way you can ever compensate us fully, but you got to do A, B, and C and work it out. Because it's something short of that, you know, they're gonna have a judgment against them, and you know, China's gonna give us the middle finger and say, you know, what are you gonna do about it? You know, drop a bomb on us? And probably we wouldn't drop a bomb on them. So it's so frustrating because, I mean, if the evidence goes in the direction where it seems like it's headed, I mean, China owes more than a giant apology. It owes a huge financial obligation to people all over the world, countries all over the world. I mean, they apparently brought this on, and certainly they suffered, but everybody else suffered a whole lot more. But you know, in terms of following the legal niceties and filing international claims, it's probably kind of a good luck situation.
If you have a question for KABC legal analyst Royal Oaks, give us a call right now at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. Your call's coming up, but right now it's time to take a look at the road. It's 2:37 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC. We're joined by KABC legal analyst Royal Oaks, also host of the Too Many Lawyers podcast, which you can download wherever you download your favorite podcasts. And we're taking your calls at 800-222-KABC on COVID-19, the vaccines, the lockdowns, anything virus-related that's on your mind. We know there's a lot of questions out there, and we have one of the best legal minds in the country here to help you out. Let's go to George. George, you're on KABC. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Hi. My question was, my son is going to be attending university this fall. My question was, is there anything we can do in regards to the requiring the COVID vaccine? And I'm not really comfortable with him taking it. Since it's like an emergency use, it's not an actual vaccine. I don't know if there's anything we can do in regards to that.
Royal?
George, this is Royal. You know, if you're talking about California, the California University of California system and Cal State University systems have announced that if you want to go to school in the fall, you have to get vaccinated, both staff and students. So this is assuming that the FDA has approved sufficient vaccines and the supplies are adequate. The problem, George, is that these systems do have the power to make these rules. You can't go to the legislature and say, doggone it, the University of California is all wrong on this, because the university controls itself. The legislature controls K through 12 schools, but not the universities. Now, you've got the exceptions. If you've got a legitimate religious objection, then you can avoid the vaccine on that basis. If you have a medical justification, if you've got a doctor saying, hey, this person's physiology is such that they're going to have a very likely serious reaction to this vaccine, you can go that route. But you can't say, you know, just as a philosophical matter, I don't believe in the vaccine. But, you know, it's you're not alone, George, and it's, you know, folks with kids in colleges as well as K through 12. Parents are really split. They took a survey recently, and they found 29% of parents of kids under 18 will vaccinate them. 32% are kind of wait and see. Let's see how it's working before they get the shot. 15% of the parents will have their kids vaccinated only if the school requires it. And 19% say, hell no, I absolutely am not going to go along with it. So it's a very controversial issue. It's frustrating, depending on whether your family is involved with, you know, colleges in California that aren't part of the UC or Cal State system, or maybe you're out of state. It all depends on what the systems want to do. Every state has the right to set up their own rules.
Let's go to Eli. Eli, you're on KABC. Hello.
Hi. My question is, is there a way to sue the governor to kind of relinquish his emergency powers? Because at this point, it makes no sense why he still has them.
Yeah, Eli, you can certainly sue for just about anything, but you can sue, and it would, you know, wouldn't be a ridiculous idea for you to make an argument that the governor has either exceeded his powers blatantly, or he's misconstrued them. He's just gone overboard. You know, the powers are okay, but he has taken steps that are inappropriate under these circumstances. The difficulty you would face is that there have been dozens of court challenges, basically from the beginning of the pandemic, against not only Governor Newsom, but also county supervisors around the state and mayors and even school boards and city council folks. And in general, these have been unsuccessful because the courts, you know, if the courts come across just a totally wacky, over-the-top rule or regulation, then, yeah, they've struck down a few. But in general, there's a strong tendency to say, look, you know, we're calling it an emergency for a reason. It's an emergency. We have public health concerns. We have governmental officials whose job it is to enforce the rules and apply the right regulations under the circumstances. And if they mess up, you can always either recall them or you can vote them out the next time around. But in terms of stripping them of their emergency powers, it probably isn't gonna happen.
Let's go to Teddy. Teddy, you're on KABC. Hello.
Hi, how are you? Royal Oaks, I commend you on your work in the 80s against the insurance companies. I have two questions. Number one, I'm a writer, producer, and all of my money I put into real estate, and that gives me an income now that I'm in my late 70s. But the governor said, I can't evict, but yet I have to pay taxes on these properties. There's been no relief. I mean, is there possibly a way that we can address that? And number two, the insurance companies now are called financial service companies. I've had a wreck where I lost a car that cost a lot of money, and they told me what the price was, which was absolutely absurd, completely off base. but that is all AAA wanted to pay. Is there any way you can go back and have that redressed?
Yeah, a couple of things, Teddy. First of all, with respect to the real estate deal, you're right, it's totally unfair. I mean, people who are tenants who are going to be on the streets without some help, it's great to give them some help. But what does that make the owner of a six-unit apartment who worked his entire life to be able to buy it? It's basically his whole investment. He's chopped liver, apparently, because he's still got to pay not only taxes, but principal interest on the mortgage and insurance and so on. And so although we are seeing some relief from people having some obligations other than tenants having to pay rent so that you put it off over the next year or two, it still it has to be paid, and a lot of people aren't getting relief. So, yeah, it's really unfair, and hopefully the legislature will take more steps to protect a greater swath of people as opposed just to tenants. On your second question about the insurance companies, first, maybe you have me mixed up with my evil twin, because in the 1980s, and actually ever since, a good chunk of my day has been defending insurance companies. So I was kind of on the side of the insurance companies in all kinds of generally claim litigation. But on your point, you know, if any insurance company, whether it's AAA or not, makes an unfair, irrational decision about, for example, a total loss deal, you're in an accident and your car's worth $12,000, and if it's, it costs $4,000 to fix it, generally, you know, they have to fix it and give you a car in good shape. They have a right, though, if it's going to cost like three-quarters or more of the $12,000 to fix it, they have a right to say, that's a total loss salvage vehicle. Here's a check. Go to CarMax and buy yourself a nice used car to replace it. If they make an irrational decision, you can go to the Department of Insurance. They've got an 800 number, and they're happy to hear your complaints, and they may even take up the fight for you. Or you could file a lawsuit and go after them in court and allege bad faith and so on. So those are kind of your options. You can also go to the Better Business Bureau and other places. But those, the first two I mentioned, are really the ways to go if you have a beef with the insurance company.
Let's go to Allison. Allison, you're on KABC. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, can my employer require our work ID badges to have like some sort of indicator, like a sticker or a pin, that you received the vaccine? Because it seems like you're just putting your medical information out there for everyone to see versus just telling your employer privately.
No, absolutely not. No badges. We don't need no stinking badges. You know, it's a problem because, you know, we have these HIPAA rules, the confidentiality and privacy of your medical records, and we're very sensitive about that. And in companies, the idea is you don't want everybody blabbing about, you know, what Mary Sue has or has not had. And so you don't get a badge that says yes or no. Now, the problem is, you know, what if Mary Sue turns up positive and, you know, other people have been working around her and maybe working around her in the future? The companies have to walk the fine line. They have to let people know, okay, there's been somebody in your general vicinity on the northwest corner of the 36th floor who had COVID, and so, you know, we're taking care of it. But they're not supposed to tell people that Mary Sue did this. I mean, it gets a little bit ridiculous. If somebody is walking around the office without a mask, maybe it's because the company said, oh, you've been vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask here at our company. Whereas other people are walking around with masks, and so people could infer the fact that, oh, I know a crucial HIPAA fact about Bill, he hasn't had the vaccine. And so the companies just have to struggle with that. But the general idea is, you know, ixnay on telling anybody your medical history of any kind. Try to keep it private.
Let's go to Gary. Gary, you're on KABC. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Thanks for putting me on. My question is about the hierarchy of who makes the rules. That we have, you know, the federal CDC, and then it rolls down to the state medical, and then we have the county medical, and then just recently the Cal OSHA has stepped in and have made their own rules that are based on, you know, science and medicine about COVID, and in some cases or these conflict, and I don't know if the Cal OSHA board has medical staff that they're looking to separate from the state medical and the county medical. So, but what are your thoughts about you know, we've got so many people telling us what the rules are, and which ones do we ultimately have to follow?
Yeah, it does really get confusing. I mean, there's sort of a general principle that, you know, federal law trumps state and local law. So if the feds had a regulation on a particular topic, that probably would prevail. But they don't always do it. And for example, we talked earlier this hour about how the CDC does not set vaccine requirements for schools. So the states are free to set those rules, and California so far has not required kids to get COVID vaccines. But you're right, it gets a little messy because, you know, you've got the state Department of Public Health, and they would kind of trump the local departments. And then there's also the issue of trust. I mean, without mentioning any names, sometimes local counties have white-haired women who are not MDs or bloviating about stuff from a political standpoint because they really want to get rid of systemic racism or whatever, as opposed to following the science. So, yeah, it's frustrating because you don't know who to follow, and sometimes the people who think that you should follow them aren't really qualified to make the opinions. And then, of course, somebody like Fauci, super controversial. Some people love him, think he walks on water, and as we know, a lot of people have serious questions about his credibility. I think all you can do is just, you know, watch the internet and try to figure out what particular authority is governing your conduct.
Royal Oaks, thank you so much for joining us today and loaning us your expertise. We really learned so much. We'll have to do this again soon.
Hey, my pleasure, John. Have a great one.
You too. And don't forget to check out Royal's podcast. It's called the Too Many Lawyers Podcast. You can download it wherever you download your favorite podcasts. It's 2:49. Let's take a look at the roads. Bye, Randy.
See you tomorrow at noon right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.